You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Fuck. This is just a bad idea from the go.
Sorry. You have Dub Progressive's Nick Taxia here. Like I said, Tom is in Mexico. He is on some very important business for the Mendoza cartel. As you know, the cartels are very very busy down in Mexico this time of year. You know, with the holiday season approaching, so they have a lot of inventory to move into the States. And Tom, you know, they don't make that much. He doesn't make that much at American Airlines, so he needs to pick up the extra cash when he can. So he's down there outside of Mexico City getting ready to help the Mendoza cartel and all they can do for them, of course. Nick Haxia, DuhProgressive.com, DuhProgressive.com. If the beginning of the show was a little bumpy, we tried out a new microphone system that appears not to work. So that's why it might have started out a little bumpy and left me a little shaky, as I am you know new to this whole talk show hosting gig thing. For those of you in the Northeast, in the Mid-Atlantic states, God bless you. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're not flooded. I hope a tree isn't on your house. I hope a tree isn't on a car. And I hope a tree isn't on you. I hope you're doing okay, and you're holding up there. So, our thoughts and prayers are with you. So anyway, I don't know if you all have seen this, but it started to leak on Facebook. Just when the storm began, and it was a picture of the guards at Arlington, at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, standing out in the storm, and it was right when it first began to get real bad here. I'm here in D.C., and it began to get really bad around that afternoon of the first day of the storm, and this picture began to float around on Facebook of these very stoic, you know, the guards there at the Tomb of the Unknowns, and they were just standing there. It was near sweating. It got very cold. The wind was just blowing. I had to go down the street. I was pushed down the street by the wind. It felt like someone was pushing me down the street. The wind was so bad. But there are those guards standing there, just over the Tomb of the Unknowns. And no little guard shack, no little awning under, you know, to stand under, just their rifles, their hats, their uniforms, and their bare freaking butts. And I saw these images floating around, and I called Arlington today, and I asked them, are these images correct? Did they stand out there the entire storm? During the beginning, sure, but when it got really bad overnight, no, yes, they said, yes, they did stand out there by the tomb, and it just struck me so much, and it struck me also, isn't it about time we had a president who, you know damn well, should look at those images too and feel the same mark of pride, feel the same little pang of emotion, and just get an overwhelming sense of you know, appreciation and awe. Who looks at those guys standing out there in that horrible, horrible weather, and just feels a sense of awe, because I don't feel like we have that type of president right now. I really don't. In fact, I don't think it. I know it. We do not have a president in the White House that I could show him the same photos, and he would look at them and get and be overwhelmed with just amazement, gratitude, and appreciation that we. You know, me, you, the Tom Garcia audience at American Hour, have. We don't have a president now that shares that emotion with those photos, and it's about time that we do. So anyway, I don't. Speaking of storms, next week this is one of the last shows, or probably the last show before the election, and if you want to talk about a storm. My God, I don't know about you all, but my guest tonight, GOP analyst and pollster and fundraiser and stand-up comic, Matt Brainerd, he and I will disagree about this, but I think it's going to be another year 2000. I think it will boil down to one state, and it won't drag on for months like 2000, but I think it will drag on for at least a week or so with a recount. I think it will boil down to one state, and I think it's going to be very contentious and just help divide us even more. So that's just me. That's what I think. And where was the Andrea Mitchell article? Yeah, Andrea Mitchell. By the way, it's time to bring on Matt. Matt, what say you?
Man. No, I have no idea. I've gotten out of the prediction game. I usually find it backfires on me. So my question is always, you know, what can I do, rather than, you know, whether my guy's going to win or not. I have no idea. I don't think anybody really does at this point. I don't have. I think the best pollster being done are being done internally by the campaigns. They don't usually publicly release those numbers, and there are all kinds of metrics that I don't have access to. Some of them are seeped out. RNC seems to be pretty happy about some of the early voting numbers and looking at comparing metrics back to 2008 and previous elections. So, you know, some of the early voting seems to be going our way, some of it doesn't. No outcome is really going to surprise me. I could, you know, I'd be happy to see a landslide from it. I would not be surprised to see Obama win all the close states. Would be an absolute nightmare. I don't even like to think. I mean, I'm at the point now where I'm having dreams about the election. It's gotten that bad. And I don't even want to start thinking about what kind of bragging we have to hear and what kind of second guess we'd have to hear if we lose this one. I mean, everybody from every one of the other primary candidates, every one of the liberal talking heads is going to start dumping on it and the whole party and calling us a rump party. I just really do not want to have to listen to that again. So, and if you have not voted or you don't have plans for voting, you've got to get on the ball. You've got to get on the ball. Just so that I do not have to listen to people second guess everything that we did this cycle.
That would really suck. I mean, that would really suck if people just, you know, this storm is predicted to give Obama a little boost. You know, because he gets to run around and look presidential and survey damage, but when Mitt Romney tries to donate to victims, Andrea Mitchell and Embassy News, they call him out on it, you know, as a campaign stunt. He's not honestly caring for these people. He's not honestly donating, you know, canned goods and so forth and all those things. He's not really trying to help these people out. It's just a campaign stunt because he's rich and therefore heartless bastard.
Did she say how much? Did Andrea Mitchell say how much money she was personally donating to?
No.
Interesting. No. Do you want to bet that Mitt probably contributed more than the entire staff of MSNBC to the cause of the flood victims on the East Coast? I'd make that bet.
Well, I do know that Andrea Mitchell could probably donate about 8 tons of makeup and still be left, and that's just what's on her face. That's not what's in her closet. She could donate about 8 tons of makeup because, you know, if everyone's house is washed away, so goes the whole makeup.
Well, yeah, I heard that the pumps they use to get the water out of the subway is the same she uses to apply it. before going on air. So maybe she could donate some of the application machinery she's got over at the station. Because they're in Manhattan now. All of them are in the CNBC studios right down in Manhattan. So
yeah.
She could just send the machine over and start all that.
I don't know. I think concerning Miss Mitchell, I think she's best. She's going to keep hold of all the personal machinery that she owns, if you know what I mean. So. Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No. I don't know. But so when Obama does it, he's being presidential and everything, and there's no scenes of him surveying the damage with Christie. The cameras were not allowed in the helicopters today, by the way. But when he goes to Governor Christie, who requested that he come and survey the damage, we'll
get. He wanted to bring the cameras. It's just that with Christie and the helicopter, they had to. Make some decisions because the lift of Marine One, it had some limitations. So Obama insists on bringing not just the camera but the teleprompter. But when they said Christie was coming out, they had to like take seats and chairs and stuff out. It's not the lack of want.
Well, I know that they are Bell helicopters, and they can only take so much. So the difference. What I want to know is, Christie invited Obama. Obama invited himself, from the reports today, to New York. Mayor Bloomberg, though, said, "That's okay, sir. Don't worry about it. You don't have to show up." By the way, whenever there's an occurrence that allows Mayor Michael Bloomberg to be on television, even if it's to report on a broken down subway train, that is in and of itself a natural disaster. That's how much I love that mayor of that city. It's a human catastrophe to have him in any public office and to see him on TV. So that being said, why did Bloom fart? He doesn't ask for Obama to visit, even though Obama asked to come and survey New York City, a city he's bound to win, and he's bound to win New Jersey too. So why did Obama to come and visit New Jersey, a state no one would be able to tell had just been turned into a big pile of rubble anyway. I'm just kidding. New Jersey's fine, and there's lots of beautiful parts of New Jersey. But I was listening to Limbaugh today, and it wasn't Limbaugh theory, but he was reading an email with somebody who had a rope-a-dope theory that Christie intentionally drew Obama off the campaign trail to indirectly help out his buddy Romney, since he was the keynote speaker of at the RNC and everything, and spoke. I don't think he mentioned Romney maybe twice in his speech. He only spoke about himself. According to this one theorist, Christie is trying to lead Romney off the campaign, or trying to lead Obama rather off the campaign trail. And get him sucked into to concentrate on a state that he's bound to win. And anyway, I can't continue to espouse this theory any further with a straight face. I'm sorry. That theory is 101% jackassical. It is ridiculous. Governor Christie is not out to help, nor has ever been out to help anyone except Governor Chris Christie. Sometimes, perhaps rarely, but indeed occasionally, what you see in the world of politics is actually face value. Governor Christie is out to steal the limelight. He doesn't care if it's an election. He doesn't care who wins. If he has my personal feeling is, if he has a chance to say something that gets himself on camera, and always they need a wide-angle lens, he's going to do it. And I think in this case, he did it. He's facing re-election next year. It's a Democrat state. Just to play it safe, he's going to have to buddy up to Obama in case Obama wins, and he gets in the news. You know, it's a win. It's a win-win. And there's no real psychology behind it.
Well, I disagree with you. I love Rush and I love all the other talking heads, but sometimes it just a little out of touch with reality and. You know, it's routine after any kind of natural disaster. It just always happens. It happened with Katrina. As the president comes and does a helicopter tour with the governor and some of the other elected officials, I don't think it's really any more than that, that's it. I mean, the president can't get away with not surveying the damage, because it's what presidents always do, and if he doesn't do it, then he'll get some criticism. So he does it, and, you know, Christie is obligated. Christie's first and foremost responsibility is to the people of the state, and, you know, there's a lot of federal cooperation. Now, honestly, I think everything would work fine without President Obama doing anything. I think it would work fine without Chris Christie doing anything either. Both the federal bureaucracy and the state bureaucracy run very much on their own in terms of getting grants out and aid from FEMA and helping people with rental payments and all that stuff. And it's really not even the federal government, but the Red Cross that's on the front line of this stuff. But this is just what happens in natural disaster. And I guess there's not enough other stuff to talk about in the news right now, but it's just a parlor game to try and speculate that there's something subtle going on here, that Christie's betraying us or he's playing a trick on somebody. I'm sure Obama would rather be out on the campaign trail doing something else in Ohio, but, it's just what presidents do. And it happened in every national disaster as long as I can remember, and it's just perfunctory. You do the helicopter tour of the disaster. Bush did in Katrina. I think the governor of the state was, you know, along the way, you know, meeting with him, and, the federal delegates were congressmen and senators. They do these things when disasters happen. I don't really read anything more into that, this and that, but I do agree that he does look a little bit presidential doing this stuff. It's probably going to be on the evening news. But at this point, I think, and I don't think it's going to matter a whole lot. I think people, for the most part, know how they're going to vote. And I still not think that this is really, because people know that this is just the president. So I don't think it's going to be terribly persuasive.
So you don't think the storm is going to...
No, I don't think the storm was a conspiracy to re-elect. I hear what you're saying. I know.
Do you think it was a Democrat? So you don't think it was a Democrat or Republican storm?
Well, it's Sandy, right? So maybe, how do I say? Well, when I said New York and all the blue states, but I don't know. Now we're getting to that 700 Club territory.
Yeah.
Let's get out of this area.
Yeah.
Next topic, please.
Yes. Our next guest, Alex Jones, everyone.
I wonder what his thoughts are on this.
I don't know.
The storm's coming to get your gold.
I told a buddy of mine, what if the storm, okay, it totally screws up, you know, Long Island, totally screws up New York City, that entire area there, and what if on Election Day, Eastern New York is for whatever reason, there's debris in the road or they have power outages or whatever, they can't vote, and New York State and Western Upper New York can vote, and my God, it goes Romney.
I think.
That of course will never ever happen.
Well, if this happened a week later, that would be a question. But I think if that was really the case, they would just have delayed New York a week. And because it's not federally in play, I don't think anybody would have a problem with that. Though there are some competitive races. Some people I know are actually getting shipped up by the NRCC at Syracuse to work in a congressional election there. So there are some important races up there, but it's not going to play in the presidential race. No. There's been talk that New Jersey could go our way this time. I'm skeptical, but I've only heard that from one or two places. So, I don't think any. But it would be interesting seeing what would happen if this was the election weekend, because I think some special measures would have been taken.
From your people that you've been talking in Virginia and elsewhere about the Romney camp, you know, here we are in Virginia, technically. How is Virginia shaping up?
Well, I got to tell you, I don't want to make a prediction, and the numbers have been all over the place. But just in terms, I was here in 2008, too, and from what I could see, there was a lot more Obama activity in this area than there was last time. A lot more people, like, repeatedly knocking on the door, a lot more signs up. You saw almost nothing from McCain, but even, Virginia's a little bit different because right now we're in Arlington. Arlington and Alexandria are very, like, the Democrat bastions in the state. The rest of the state's relatively conservative, but even this area, I'm seeing a lot more Romney signs, a lot more enthusiasm. I watched the second or third debate at the Romney headquarters here in Arlington. There was a lot of energy in the room. I'm not even sure such a headquarters existed when McCain ran. All those things point to good signs, and usually when a president runs for election, you look at you do a good job and you look at expanding your state that you've won. Whereas this time the president is pulling states off the map that he won. I mean, he won Indiana by about a point, and this time the numbers show him down double digits. So that Indiana's really remarkable to me in that it's completely out of play, whereas last time they won. And so it's unusual to see a president take such a defensive posture. It doesn't bode well for him. I'd rather be where we are than they are right now.
Also, another thing that I'm glad I hear what you're saying. By the way, we have somebody calling in. I'm getting a call in. Now, this person, he's been waiting for a while, I see, and he's either dying to say either something nice or something really nasty. So I'm gonna.
Oh, we don't say calls, do we?
No, it's not FCC coordinated. But hopefully, this person is at least PG-13. And let me see. Hello there. Hello. Nope, they're not on. Okay, they hung up. Good. Anyway, well, I don't know. It's supposed to work. The switchboard's supposed to work like that. So, okay. My first hang-up call of my career. So, when we talk about the Benghazi thing, switching gears, when I go on Facebook, all I see is, you know, Benghazi this, Benghazi that. Benghazi is important. And my lure, they drop the ball up to and including knowingly allowing this incident to happen for whatever motivation. That's what I, at best, it was gross incompetence. And you see this picture being floated around on Facebook constantly of Obama on the phone, and then there's Osama bin Laden next to him, and the caption says, when Obama wanted bin Laden, he called the SEALs. When the SEALs called Obama, he deserted them. I wish this would be playing more with your average voter who may out of, you know, I know a lot of people who don't know who they vote for. They just do it on a coin toss, and they just make up their minds on the way to the polls. And I don't think that the Benghazi thing, as important as it is to people, you know, who pay attention to stuff, I don't think it's going to sway your average independent voter who's concerned about the next episode of Honey Boo Boo. Who's going to win Dancing in the Stars? Dancing with the Stars.
Which is a new episode already?
I got
cut out, man. I'll see you.
Okay, all right. Matt's leaving, everybody. He's going to go watch Honey Puke Puke is what I call it. But I wish this would play more with people, but it appears, you know, it's not having an impact. It's having an impact among the base, but, you know, the base is the base. We're already jazzed up. We're already going to vote against Obama. A lot of us will punch that damn machine, so it will probably break. Hurting our chances even more. No one will be able to use the machine. We'll be punching that button for Romney so hard.
Yeah, there's a. I can't really get into the head of a voter who's undecided at this point. And I imagine that most of these undecided voters, when you say Benghazi, they think it's that fancy new restaurant that just opened up that turns the gnocchi that they make in the window for you. I don't think they can find Benghazi on the map. To be that low information to be still undecided. I mean, you really win an election, a combination of three ways. One, and this gets a lot of attention, focusing on those undecided voters in the middle, but at this point, gosh, I don't know. But the other, and this is what I think they're going to be very good at, is turning out your own voters. I think last time around, some of our voters were discouraged. They didn't want to turn out. They didn't vote. But I think now we've got a really good turnout engine, you know, across the party, across the campaign, Senate campaign, congressional campaigns, everything up and down the ticket. Everybody's been cooperating very well. Tea Party's been very helpful. And I think you can see possibly a repeat to some extent, which is on 2010. And the third way is to suppress the vote of your opponent. And I think that it's hard to do that in ways that don't also hurt you with the middle. But, I think it's all a turnout game. And that's why they call it, you know, the 72-hour program. It was the last 3 days before the election. Both sides have their GOTV efforts. That's a common election acronym for get out the vote. So So right now, the entire operation is focused on turning out the voters by any means necessary. I heard an interesting story that the Democrats have been putting their efforts in getting their more reliable voters to do early voting, whereas Republicans have been focusing more on the low propensity voters, the ones who are less likely to turn out. So it will be interesting to see how that strategy plays out. In my mind, both of them have merit. So, I mean, if you're a low propensity voter, you only say vote once in a while sporadically, and you've got a limited budget to spend on going after these people, getting the turn in that absentee ballot. Do you want to go after those guys, or do you want to spend that effort on getting out the people who habitually turn out and are going to turn out no matter what? I think it's a wise choice, because for a lot of the Republican-leaning low propensity voters for whom it's too big a pain in the ass to go show up on election day and stand the line, and I think I have never actually done it. I've always voted early or absentee. In fact, because I was overseas when the primary happened, South Carolina actually lets me vote by email. But I think it's probably a wise choice to put that effort in getting those people to vote by, you know, fill all the paper mailed in. The party knows whether you voted or not. Rather than Democrat strategy, if it's getting their, you know, people are going to show up anyway and wasting resources on getting them to turn out. So, sorry, we got a little technical there, didn't we?
That's okay. That's okay. Lord help us if the show ever gets uninteresting, you know? Oh, my God.
Well, I have a fart machine on my cell phone, so we can...
Actually, that was one of the, on Del Progressive, DUH Progressive, that time, that was one of my... I love the story personally. It didn't get that much traction, unlike the one now about Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But Obama actually congratulated they're 11 years old. They're called the Weinstein, or the Wurstein brothers. They invented the fart machine, and he hailed them as a proof that America still holds the technological edge in all the world's important developments.
Yeah, ironically, it's not really a green dog because of all the carbon that was released. Methane. Greenhouse gases, they're produced by these, because all these sounds have to be recorded at the source. And you know how many takes it takes to get the right recording, how many holes it puts in. It's like a whole herd of cows.
Right. Sounds like sounds like one of Obama's interviews. Mm-hmm. So, which, by the way, speaking of, this wasn't Obama, but this was Clinton a few days ago. He said, Clinton, when the Romney camp accused Obama of forcing Jeep to move its overseas with its manufacturing, Clinton was out in Ohio. He was out in Youngstown, Ohio, and he said, Obama turned to me, and he goes, you know what? It's those types of accusations that hurt my feelings the most. So Obama had his little feeling wheelings hurt. Screw this man's feelings. Screw this man's feelings. He can take his feelings. He can. Okay, never mind. He can. I would be crude by one of them. He can shove him up his ass. How about that? I don't care about Obama's feelings. What about he's got a country of 310 million people, probably just 300 when you don't count the illegal aliens, who are, you know, they're either stagnant. A few are doing well, but most are either stagnant. 23 million are unemployed. The real unemployment numbers are about 14%. Unemployment, when you count the underemployed, people with college degrees and everything, that are end up, you know, saying, hey, would you like some more fries? You know, that's not the type of economy that we want. And but yet the president's going on to Bill Clinton about how accusations from the Romney camp hurt his feelings. That's just amazing. You know, we have president, I call him president sociopath. You know, and I remember when we were at a stand-up thing together, you and I.
Which room was this? We can name drop. What room was this? Is this RFD?
No, this wasn't RFD. This is our regular Monday.
Oh, the Monday, right? Washington, D.C. Right? Yeah. We can fuck them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we can.
Duty dress truck. What time is it? 8? 8 o'clock?
It's 8 o'clock.
Eight o'clock every Monday. Yeah, come and
Yeah, it's on 14th and Florida. Come, and if you don't agree with what we say here, you can show up and kick us in the nuts. And then order some nice Salvadorian food. They have a great port.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, they have that new, what you call the restaurant Benghazi.
Much better than restaurant Benghazi.
Yeah, they have a great...
better customer service.
Yeah, great fried ambassador platter that you can get. And if your food is on, you know, if you get into trouble at the restaurant, if you have, you know, you choke on your food and you need the Heimlich, don't bother calling for help. They're not going to help. So that's a restaurant, that's Benghazi Bar and Grill. But, so Obama's concerned about his feelings are hurt. You know, let's get over this. Let's get over this man. He's been called every name in the book by those on our side. He's been called a communist. He's been called a Marxist. He's been called, you know, a socialist, a collectivist, a Muslim, a terrorist, a this, a that, and that, and this. Before anything, and I realized this, you know, 5 minutes after first being introduced to the guy back in 2008, I said, this man is, he might have, you know, socialist collective, you know, leanings and beliefs and all that, well, more than a leaning, but before anything, this man is an Obamaist. Obama is about Obama.
Wait, when did you get introduced? How did you get introduced to the senator?
No, I don't.
Were you like, have you been playing the other side? Were you at a fundraiser for him? Because that's usually the only way you get.
Well, truth be told, I worked for a company in 2008, the likes of which I will not mention, not because, you know, of legality, just because, you know, I just ate. I don't want to lose everything I just ate from the Benghazi Bar and Grill. And so I won't name the company, but I had to be out in Denver for the convention. And I saw him give the speech in front of the pillars and everything. When the crowd dispersed and everything, I wasn't that far away from him. And it was just, I mean, he's a great public speaker. And unfortunately, though, I think ultimately he's all about him. Yes, he also, after that comes the socialism. After that comes this globalist, collectivist, you know, one size fits all. There are no achievers. You know, and everybody, it's like Harrison Bergeron, the old Ray Bradbury, I believe Ray Bradbury, no, Vonnegut. It's like the still, you know, it's like that. So
yeah, I hear you on that. I think everybody kind of got that notion. I mean, anybody in the mid-40s that has two autobiographies already out, you can say that maybe narcissism is a problem, just maybe. I am a little bit envious that you got to get your leg tangled like that in person, though.
Yeah. I had to be there for work. I mean, I wasn't. We were a bipartisan company, so we helped everybody. Of course, I helped them. You know, when I had to give advice to the Republicans, I helped them out a little more. But you know, and the Democrats I dealt with were mainly local people running for sheriff, running for, you know, council person, whatever. So it was my job. I helped them out. My God, I did not.
So what you're saying, is you're really responsible for the last 4 years.
Yeah, I am. You know, of course.
No.
It's collective. Don't you understand? We're living in an age of collectivism. You know, so we're all guilty. We all share this Obama guilt because the Republicans hired, you know, Daffy Duck and hired an old pirate and Daffy Duck to run last time. I know we have a lot of Sarah Palin fans out there. She has a place, but it's not an office, or at least that type of office, you know, something of that magnitude.
I hear. I will offer you dispensation as a card-carrying member of the Tea Party and the right-wing conspiracy. But you're going to have to do some penance. Some penance to make up for this. Because I think 50% of your salary is the RNC for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
That sounds.
It was my job. It was my job. I moved down to D.C. It was my first. I was very excited to have it.
You must become a paying subscriber to Glenn Beck Television. and listen to his show every day, per day, per 4 hours, plus all the other extra crummy shows that he's running on his network.
Matt, when we get off the air, I'm going to name you the company, and then you'll realize I've already
Why can't I hear this? The listeners can't. I bet they want to know.
No, because the guy, actually, I'm feeling kind of sick just thinking about the guy and the company, so I won't get
it.
Wow.
Okay, right.
I won't get in.
Given that our studios are atop the Washington Monument, and we've got a really nice view, but I do not want him throwing up over the lovely furniture in the Talk America Radio.
I mean, God knows how many Japanese tourists, 500 people, will be just splattered with, you know, just four-hour-old, beef jerky. My God. So I don't want to do that. You know, God bless.
They get enough of that from Godzilla back home.
Yeah.
Here he gets a bad indigestion after eating enough of the locals and just goes everywhere.
But also, wouldn't it be great, and actually changing gears back to the thing, you know, Obama's been called everything, and we on the right have been so polarized by this guy. Go and talk to your neighbor who may not vote that much, who may be moderate, who may not have a care in the world about politics, but yet is registered. You know, go talk to them. Don't yell at them, call them a socialist if they don't agree with you, okay? That's not the way to win points. Just say, you know, are things better now than they were 4 years? You know, where are the price of gas and everything? Who doesn't know somebody who is worse off now job-wise, financially, than they were 4 years ago? Who is, you know, granted, we had arguably a big foul-up with George Bush in Iraq, but still that was in response to horrible events here at home, so they say. And talk to your neighbors who may not be, and your friends who may be eligible to vote and may not be planning on it. Get them out there.
Yeah, but first of all, hello, Barbara. Need to get that out there. Second, if one organization, Americans for Tax Reform, put out a Obamacare tax form, because, you know, the IRS is now going to have to be told all of your personal information regarding health care in order to make sure that you're obeying the individual mandate portion of the Affordable Health Care Act, and that goes into effect in 2014. And they put together what is, it looks very authentic, and it's based on everything in the act itself. And I would encourage you, here's a thought. Go to ObamacareTaxForm.org, print out that tax form, and start slipping it under your neighbor's doors, because that is the tax form they're going to have to fill out. There's no way around it. We do know there's a similar plan in Massachusetts, and that tax form is 3 pages long. This one's just 2 pages, including instructions. I think people, when they see that actual tax form that they're going to have to fill out, to ask them who's their health care provider, what kind of plan they have, what's their group number, what's their member ID, and then ask them, you know, if you're a member of an excluded group, meaning groups that do not have to pay or be covered by the individual mandate, are illegal aliens, people in prison, and people on welfare. And there are a few people with a religious exemption. I think Quakers are exempt from it, but that's about it. Sadly, Catholics are not. So take a look at that form at ObamacareTaxForm.org and print it out and share it with your neighbors and see if they're interested in filling that thing out every year for the rest of their lives, starting in the year 2014. Yeah, go ahead, stay home. But the only way of stopping that, really the only way of stopping that, is to defeat Obama and elect Romney. That's the only way you are not filling that form out for your 2014 return.
Well, how are we convinced? Because there's a lot of diehard libertarians. There's constitutionalists. There's natural law people in the audience. How do we convince them? Now they're saying, well, Romney. I can hear now. Well, Obama got his cue from Romney with the Romney Care in Massachusetts. You know, listen, that was in Massachusetts. That's state by state, and that's not cool either. You have to defeat that but at least without Obamacare, when that specter of collective medicine raises its ugly head, you can defeat that on the state level. You know, it shouldn't be passed anyway. And I don't understand, but it's far from perfect in Massachusetts. I don't know why Romney hasn't been able to say, you know what, this aspect of it in Massachusetts, it did cause more death than we thought. Blah blah blah. Why hasn't it? You know, why don't you come clean about, instead of just, the only line I've heard him take is, well, that's Massachusetts and it should be a state issue. Why not attack the actual idea of it, which is, you know what, there's a lot of this collective medicine stuff, be it statewide or federal, that just, it doesn't fly. It doesn't work out.
Well, I think his argument is pretty convincing. You know, what's right in one state or what seems to work or what the people want, and face it, the people in Massachusetts overwhelmingly wanted that, and they continue to seem to want it. That's federalism, and the problem, you know, the challenge of democracy and freedom and liberty means people have to, can do things that seem unpleasant. But I think his argument for federalism, and he said it at the time, he said that, look, letting each state come up with their own plan, you know, is really a model for the nation. And the thing is, maybe it's not exactly the same plan that he would have fashioned if he had a cooperative Republican legislature. He tried to elect one in his midterm, but this didn't work. And, you know, I fear that if he had not stepped in and tried to work out a better plan that the Democrats state Senate, state legislature would have come up with, would have been something far worse, probably some kind of single-payer system like what you have in Canada. And the situation would be much worse than it is now. But, and I don't know, that debate seems so far behind us now. It's basically, do you want Romney Care or do you not? If you like it, please vote for Obama, or stay home. If you want to get rid of it, you have to vote Romney. That's all it means anymore. That's the only argument that has any relevance anymore.
Another argument that I think so many people are former Obama, aficionados and supporters and all that, and independents now who are going to vote for Romney. Another thing that we are tired of is just the polarization. This country has, I think, been pretty much divided right in half ever since 2000 after Clinton. Clinton was pretty, you either love to hate the guy. And I think it really began under Clinton, this very sharp division. Really came out in the year 2000, even pronounced deeper in 2004 with a narrow victory of Bush in Ohio and all that kind of stuff. But with Obama, it just sent to a new unprecedented level. I don't think it's been around since the turmoil of the 60s. And I think people are, Romney, I look at the guy, my God, I can find something wrong about every candidate. There's something personal, emotionally that just strikes me wrong about the guy. I can't really with Romney. He's just this big, tall, goofy Mormon with magic Mormon underwear. And he's with a very successful business career. The liberals would call it a vulturistic, vampiristic career.
That's because they like to tell lies, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you don't say. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that's
you,
that.
Yeah, I know.
Did you have any idea?
You know what? I'll call, I would call Shepard Smith. What the hell would that do? But anyway, it sucks because no one on the right, your average critic of Obama, has been able to do so also without being called a racist. I don't know about you all, but I am very much looking forward to getting. That doesn't mean I want a white president. I don't. Whatever. I just would like to be able to criticize the president without being considered a racist by his supporters. I miss that. I want that back. That doesn't mean I want a white president per se. It's just I want to be able to. And my God, when Romney gets in office, it's not like I or Matt won't find anything to criticize about the guy. It's not like it's going to be perfect. You know, we'll be able to criticize him, but at least we'll be able to do so without being called racist. Instead, we'll be called anti-Mormon or religious bigots or something.
I don't plan on. After this election, I'm leaving. I've got my trip booked for Singapore, packing up the bag. I've had enough. I hope we win, but I don't plan on criticizing anybody after this election. I'm done. I'm retiring from politics.
Yeah.
I mean, this is insane. It's so insane. It's so consuming. I don't know. I think that that you're right about the polarization, though, because you may remember, like in 1988, when Bush was reelected to Reagan's third term, they won a lot of states. They had a commanding victory in the Electoral College, and while you know, you can look at Clinton, for example, and see he did pretty well, but both the times he was elected, he got less than, the first time it was 43%, the next time he didn't break 50%.
Yeah, Rothbro got 19%.
Yeah, but even when Rothbro was like even a non-issue, he came in under 50%. And then in 2000, he had W losing the popular vote and just eating it out in minority, you know, 2004, more convincing victory, but still very close. 2008 was much of a sweep, but you know, you still have 53%. You never saw a map painted one color, kind of like you did in 1980, 1984, 1988, or going back into the Eisenhower days or to JFK. It just seems I can't imagine a day when we would have a Republican again win New York or California, or have a Democrat say sweep the Midwest or win Texas like LBJ did.
So you're saying we need a bigger storm next time?
I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know. I just think there's a lot of vision. And this division's gone on for a long time. It's gone back in history. This same ideological divide, it goes all the way back to...
it goes back to the founding, really.
No, it goes back. No, it goes back.
I mean, if you have people who want more federal control versus people want more state control.
Oh, I say it's deeper than that. It goes all the way back to Greece and the ancient philosophers. And you had Aristotle and you had Plato. And if you look at their philosophies, the right, the conservative right in America, their philosophy is fully rooted in Aristotle. And the left is fully rooted in Plato's. And you can follow it through history. You follow it more, you know, in the medieval ages, you find Plato evolved into Augustine. And Aristotle evolved into Aquinas. And those dueling philosophies just continue today. And you find them in Europe. You find them in all the other Commonwealth countries. And, you know, I think for the most part, basically the beginning of this country is kind of founded by more or less the Tea Party kind of motion, movements. And then it swung back towards this collectivism, sort of a soft socialism in the early teens after the Civil War and the after the boom and bust of the 1920s, and just the core of these are two very different philosophies. And I think I agree with Paul Krugman on this, that there is a deep philosophical divide in this country in terms of the role of government and just the outlook on life in general, and I don't see how that gets patched back together.
Bill Murray, actor, comedian Bill Murray, was quoted recently as saying that he thinks Americans need to take more responsibility for their lives. And he's an old curmudgeon. Bill Murray's an old, say what you want, he's become like an old curmudgeon as he gets longer in the tooth, but he's, you know, he still has his hits, movie, you know, career-wise, and he's certainly right about that. And I don't care what anyone says. Romney, although I think he was painting with too broad a brush, he certainly had more than a grain of truth when he said it's 47% comment. It might not be 47%, but there are a distinct amount, I think I was raised by one, of people in this country who think that I was born, therefore I deserve. I've met them, I've spoken with them, they just think that they're naturally entitled to things. And they see people who come from wealthy backgrounds, come from, you know, generations which have, that money didn't fall, even going back generations, that money didn't fall out of the air, had to be creative. You know, you had to create something, you had to work hard at a job, you had to come up with an idea, you had to go in a partnership with somebody. And, you know, they see that, and it's a mark of jealousy. With Tom Garcia, I wonder how he's doing with shipping that inventory from the Mendoza cartel. Anyway, I'm getting Tom Garcia said the other week about coveting. You know, liberals they covet. Yes, they covet. But they don't covet in the way of, damn, you know, I want that. I want to see how I can go out and get it for myself. It's, no, I want it. I want to take it from you. What's the reward in that, ultimately? Do you feel better about yourself when everything is said and done? I mean, is life, you know, is the meaning of life really that skin deep? And, oh, God, now I'm bringing up skin again. Oh, God.
You know, I heard a good friend of mine is the editorial page editor of the Washington Times. His name is Brett Decker. And he laid it out pretty simply. I mean, the selection comes down to one candidate wants to give you free goodies, and the other guy wants to take some free goodies away from you. And that's kind of where it is. And if you're on the side that's getting the free goodies, it's very hard to vote any other way once you become dependent. It's almost like those old zombie movies. Once the government got its fingers into your hand, it's like it's in your bloodstream, and you start walking really awkwardly or very quickly, depending on what zombie film you're a fan of. Like, oh, those are all very slow, but lately the zombies just come very quickly.
It's 28 days later, really.
Okay, yeah. Once they sort of touch you or scratch you, it gets into you, and you start acting crazy, and your eyes are all glossy, and once you're infected with those government goodies, it turns into one of an Obama zombie, a Democrat zombie, and that's what they count on to keep them in power. And it's been a trick they've been on for a long time. You know, you don't often hear candidates call for the repeal of Social Security anymore. They don't get very far if they do, and that's because they've all got that zombie infection of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. So it's very, or should I say, Medicare. And it's going to become the same way as Obamacare. It's just one more layer of infection that's going to make it harder to pull out of you. It's just going to make society as a whole sicker and more dependent on an extremely inefficient and government that's based on political pull rather than market economics. And I don't know how much more of this country can take, but, you know, the great empires, they always say, they don't fall from attackers from abroad. They collapse from within. And getting really close to that, really close to that happening, and you know, I'll wave at you from Singapore, I promise.
Yeah, we'll wave back. Albeit we'll be sinking. Where do you stand on the individual? Because that was Obamacare's biggest selling point, was not the individual mandate, but pre-existing conditions.
Well, pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
It's a tricky situation because the reason it's so hard to ensure, and this is an economic argument, and here's the problem. I make this economic argument about why the finances and the risk doesn't work out exactly so well for trying to insure anybody with a pre-existing condition. And the other guy trots out, you know, this picture of a poor, sick child, and, you know, that's the argument. Hey, this kid is dying. You don't want him to have health care. And I'm trying to explain that pre-existing conditions, I think, need their own system to handle them. The problem is that if you have a pre-existing condition, it's very hard for the insurance company to put together a risk pool because if they price the insurance too high, you're not going to buy it. But if they price it at a price you want to buy it as somebody with a pre-existing condition, you are better. You know more about your illness and know more about the costs that are going to be incurred than the insurance company does. So the only reason you're ever going to buy that policy is if it's priced in such a way that you wind up paying less if you buy it. That's not how everybody buys insurance. You buy insurance because, you know, there's some risk that something would happen. Like, you know, Nick and I are sitting here. You know, there's a one, you know, the odds are one of us is going to get cancer, and that's going to cost $10 to treat. So we both agree we're just going to put in $5. And whoever gets the cancer, you know, so we have lower risk, but neither of us is stuck with a $10 bill. We're just paying $5 each. So there's a risk pool of pre-existing conditions. There needs to be some kind of system set up to deal with them long term. And that was the problem with Obamacare to begin with, is that 85-90% of Americans were already kind of happy, reasonably happy, with their health care plans that they had. And the system basically reset it for everybody rather than just focusing on the few hard cases and a way to deal with them and get them the health care they need. It turned the whole table over. So that was absolutely the wrong way to go. And I can tell you, as an employer, once Obamacare was passed, they started adjusting the prices to prepare for the additional costs. And the plans all got worse. Our plans were canceled. They were replaced with less plans were not as good and cost more money. The problem with an individual mandate isn't that you just have to buy insurance, but you have to buy an insurance plan that the government approves of. So you can't just, you know, get a subscription to a New England Journal of Medicine and say, hey, I'm just going to read this every month. That's going to be my insurance. No. It has to be one that's approved by the government, and the government has to decide what gets covered, and that becomes a matter of political pull. And then it gets expensive, so they suddenly start adding things like acupuncture. If the acupuncturist has a very good lobbyist, then everybody has to pay for acupuncture coverage, et cetera, et cetera. So it just corrupts the whole system. And so I don't know if I answered your question or just kind of went on a rant there, but...
That's all right. This whole show is a rant, and every episode. So
that's why we get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
Good rant.
Well, for example, what's your suggestion for me? When I applied to MetLife, they said, do you have a pre-existing condition? I said, yes, I have a bifurcated aortic valve. Hence why I drink and smoke. And it's good for the heart, I'm telling you. No one believes me.
Bifurcated, that sounds like it. It's like your nose, it's bifurcated.
So it's an obstacle.
Yes. Well, the valve of the heart is supposed to have three doors on it. It's supposed to, when you slice it open, it's supposed to look like a Mercedes sign. It has three doors that they open up like that. But mine is deformed and is in two. And it, consequently, you know, I have to take high blood pressure medicine and just, you know, the cardiologists say this condition is not going to cause you, alone is not going to cause you to have a heart attack. You know, if I have a heart attack, there will be other factors. You know, I try to eat healthy, try to exercise, but I do like my cigars and my martinis. I must profess to that, and my good, you know, beer, my Fat Tire, and all that kind of stuff. But I go to MetLife. And I say to them, and they turn me down. I go to United Health, and they turn me down. I go to three out of four turn me down. Now, when I get turned down to a condition that the cardiologist himself says is not going to kill me, that I just need a very generic, cheap brand of blood pressure medicine just to keep in check. And I already do eat healthy. I already do work out. This election has been taking a toll. I've been able to hit the gym as much as I like covering it. But, you know, what am I supposed to do? Just bust out the Constitution and read it and feel better? I mean, that was the big argument for the big selling point for Obamacare was pre-existing conditions are going to be covered. I have no idea why the other selling point was your kids can stay on your health care plan until age 26. Well, that's beyond me. But the other thing, though, that's what made it fly.
Yeah. Well, so three out of four reject you, but one out of four touch you.
Yeah, I mean,
no, I just want to make sure I heard that right. But I understand it's difficult. I mean, look,
it is difficult, and it doesn't feel good to be turned away for a condition that you have no. I was born with it.
I hear you, and I think that the good news is that Romney wins. My understanding is that it's a plan to repeal and replace. So to answer you in practical political terms, Obamacare will be repealed, but some things will stay in place, like coverage for pre-existing conditions. In your case, it seems like the insurance companies are making a bit of a mistake. I mean, my point of view, my take on it would be that it would be much easier for healthcare plans to cover people with your condition if they were able to create larger pools of people. Right now, all the pools are just on a state level. If you were able to sell across state lines,
Yeah. You'd
be able, you know, anytime you get a larger, accessible to a larger group of people, the risk goes down. So I think there are a lot of free market reforms that could go towards fixing or addressing your concerns. So unfortunately, this one often, I'm kind of optimistic that some of these things, if we have a Republican Congress, the close Senate, and the President Romney can be addressed, because I mean it'd be the easiest thing in the world to create this, allow, it's clearly constitutional to be able to sell across state lines. The federal government could just with the stroke of a pen allow any insurance company to do that, but they decided not to. For gosh, I have no idea why they didn't. I think that's one of the answers. I think there's probably a free market solution, especially The other kind of pre-existing conditions are folks who basically trash themselves for the first 50 years of their lives with alcohol, drugs, tobacco, etc. And
sugar, soda, soda, nothing but. So I go to my grand. It's funny. My grandparents, God bless them and God love them. They're both still with us. Grandpa's a vet and everything.
Embrace them while you're
trying. I try to go see him once a week. I call him every day, see what's up, you know.
What a good grandpa. They must be a tremendous.
Well, actually, they're in their mid and late 80s, and it's ironic. Every day they go to a different doctor, and it's ironic because what keeps them as healthy as they are is constantly having to physically go see the doctor. That's what keeps them in shape.
Just
constantly running to the doctor. So I sit down for dinner with them, and they're like, what would you like to drink? We got Coke, we got ginger ale, you got this, you know, Acme purple soda, great crap. I'm like, I just have water. You have what? Yes, I just drink water with my meal. And furthermore, I'm not going to eat your pasta and this and that. I'll have this out, and I'll have, like, some white breasted. What's up with you? Well, I moved to D.C., and I became a yuppie. It's true. You move to an area where everyone eats healthy and everything, and you begin to, you know, pick up certain tips here and there, and you end up just being healthier. And that's now I go and I visit them, and I have water, and they look at me like I have two heads. Meanwhile, they have out the ass diabetes. They have high blood pressure. They got to, you know, take their, you know, snip their fingers and do the sugar test before every meal, and you know, it's basically they actually eat food with their pills as a side dish. You know, the main course of food are the all their pills that they have to take. You know, what would you like with your pills? I think I'll have some steak. Okay, great. So yeah, the eating has become healthier. But the thing about Obamacare is, once the government, like you say, they have their claws in you, and with the tax form and everything, they'll be able to dictate your lifestyle. Oh, this test result shows that you like cigars. Well, you're not going to be covered. You know, that's the thing that really scares me, is this tampering with your lifestyle, which coincidentally, ironically, takes a bit of a collectivism. If you're willing to pay, if you're on the same plan as somebody who's trashing themselves, and you're willing to pay a higher premium due to someone who's on their same plan, you know, who's just down it, you know, smokes two packs a day and, you know, has basically an IV of lard going into their veins.
Yeah, actually, funny, the Obamacare plan, all the plans that they're going to approve are going to be required to use a community rating. And what that means is that the plans, the healthcare companies, are not going to allow us to price anything differently based on your lifestyle. So it's more based on community rating, means that they can't look at you individually and say, you are morbidly obese, you are out of shape, you smoke, etc., and then charge you more. They're not allowed to do that with community rating. So
that fear is unfounded.
Well, it is right now. But the thing is, then it becomes a matter of democracy. So if the majority of the public decides to change that, I guess they could elect representatives and change. I mean, that's a great thing that Rami said about you can choose to fire your health insurance company or pick one of the different plans. You're not really going to do that anymore because every plan is going to be required to meet the federal guidelines to be part of the exchange, etc. So it's exactly what Goldwater said. The government is big enough to give you everything you want, big enough to take it all away. So they can give you health care and not charge you any differently because you are completely out of shape and smoke cigarettes and drink a lot of alcohol and live on a diet of fast food. Well, guess what? They can also take it away. They can also say, hey, you smoke a cigarette, you smoke a cigar every week or so. Well, you're going to have to pay more. It may not be receive the same level of coverage as everybody else. It's a problem with democratizing it, whereas in an open market, you know, they'll be the path to your door to offer you a plan.
Well, and that's, did you have anything else to add? I mean, major point-wise.
You mean, so I don't ever have a point. You brought the wrong guest on. I thought I was just going to chill and drink a soda, a sugar-free diet soda while you talk and occasionally chime in with smart-ass remarks. That's really my specialty.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's my specialty.
Well, it's nice that we went like the last 10 minutes without talking about the election. You're talking about your bad ticker.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. You know, my cardiologist said, you know, you're doing better now at age 35 than what you were doing at age 25. Because when I was age 25, I ate pizza, ramen noodles, soda, and since being in D.C. and joining it, you know, getting to this whole yuppie, which is probably the complete antithesis of how most of our listeners live out there. You know, a lot of our listeners are in the Midwest and everything, and out in more rural areas. But you know, you live in a big city, and you sit behind a desk all day at your job. You don't have a job that requires physical, you know, physical stress on your body. You go to a gym, you start eating healthier, and you do get healthier, and it actually you do feel better. You know, I used to have lots of trouble with insomnia. You know, since I started eating better and working out. I only have to take 3 Ambien a night instead of 5. So that's a step up. That's a step up in my opinion. I think I'm really coming around.
Yeah. One thing that really perplexes me is how being around all these hippies and folks who are conscious about the personal health and everything. Have you seen Al Gore in the last couple of years?
He's really
blown up.
Yeah,
he has exploded and. It's so hypocritical because the thing is, he's all about reducing the carbon footprint of individuals and, you know, or the release of these carbons into the ocean. That literally means that to reduce that number, somebody has to stop doing something they're doing now. Somebody has to stop consuming energy or consuming something. And he's asking the whole world to do it, but when you disaggregate it down, you're literally asking individuals to do with less. That's his goal. When he himself has just put on the poundage. He's clearly not doing well with us. And I guess it's just the steaks they serve you up in the private jet he flies around in. But I don't know, this just came to mind. It's just popped in there. It bothers me.
He's the biggest hypocrite in the world. And a lot of these jokers, they're the biggest hypocrites in the world. And this guy in office now, Obama, if you haven't seen the Dinesh D'Souza film, 2016, and if you don't have time to see it, you can go into duhprogressive.com, go to True Op-Ed, and read my piece about it that came out. It basically echoes that film. I couldn't believe it. I sat there in the film a week after I wrote it, and I'm like, oh my God, I just wrote this film. Now, of course, I didn't, because I wrote it in a matter of a few days, and Dinesh D'Souza put that film together matter of a few years, but it explains where this guy is coming from. I hear a lot of talk on Facebook, on Twitter, oh, he's evil, he's this, he's a Muslim. Number one, I don't think he's a Muslim, because being a Muslim requires believing in something higher than yourself, and I don't believe Obama is able to do that. Obama is first an Obamaist. Then he's, you know, this collective, global, one world, you know, type of guy. Where everybody's the same and we're all on one same level of achievement, and it just makes you want to puke. It makes you want to puke. No one will be allowed to achieve more than anything else, and that's the whole thing. He's trying to drag this nation down to a one low common level in stature and wealth and prestige throughout the rest of the world. I honestly believe that. And domestically, he's trying to do the same thing with everyone else. I only have heard him, and you can actually see him cringe when he gives lip service to, you know, big business and free enterprise and all that. You can actually see him cringe. It's like he's at a trip to the proctologist. Speaking of doctors, you know, he just heard the snap of the rubber glove. He's, oh God, I got a hail business. Oh, God. But then every once in a while you'll hear him flip up. You didn't build that. Somebody else built that, you know. So that's really him. And a lot of you out there, you're libertarian, you're Ron Paul supporters, you're Gary Johnson supporters, you're constitutionalists, natural law.
I understand that. And I have a lot of sympathies for Ron Paul, and I agree with a hell of a lot of what he says. But, damn it, you're going to, let's get this Joker out of there. And that's Romney. And I can just hear it now. Oh, great. Tommy, you had two Romney mouthpieces on your show last week. Well, hey, I think Romney wasn't my first choice. Unlike Matt here, who's been with him, you've been with him since...
07, bro.
07. Yeah.
From Jump Street.
From Jump Street. You know him very well.
Okay.
Every nook and cranny. I don't know if you've gotten below the Magic Woman underwear yet, but
he sent me an autographed pair. I'll treasure this forever. And, you know, I have a person. Look, I know there are a lot of Gary Johnson supporters. They're not a lot. They seem to be three or four really loud ones on my Facebook. But I have real sympathy, and I'd love to invite you over to my apartment. Personally, I'm on the 10th floor of a high rise, and I'd love to personally invite you over, make a nice dinner, light the candles, and invite you out to my balcony and push you off.
We love our Gary. I listen to him on he was on NPR, and he was on not All Things Considered, but the one.
What a whiny ass! I mean, what's wrong with you? What is wrong with you, Gary? No, I wrote about.
I disagree. I staunchly disagree. I'm more liberal.
Like,
Gary.
I could hit them with my car rather than. But
no,
it's so much easier.
No, I have to tell.
I don't have to clean up this way. It's like, oh, it's my cell. Which floor did they fall from? I have no idea. It came from my apartment.
Of course, because these shows aren't now. Now, I personally do have, I think our foreign policy has gotten way too interventionist. But unlike Ron Paul supporters who think that if Ron Paul, let's say, were elected, like all that would change overnight. You can't change that overnight. You can only put so much of the toothpaste back in the tube. A lot of what Ron Paul says, I agree with, but it could not be implemented. If you implemented everything that he said just overnight, I think it would be mass chaos.
Oh, you
can't go back to a Goldwater like mentality and put it and implement it policy wise overnight. You just can't. Can you imagine if drugs were legal? But imagine the industry that's built up over drugs.
Yeah,
the prosecutors, the lawyers, the police, the guards, the judges.
I know, but it's so funny because the poly, those types of people like to talk about how wonderful things would be if they're in power. But that's like candy land, because to be in power, you have to win a majority. And this is a guy who dropped out of the Republican primary. Here's the problem. The real problem here, and this is actually true of Ron Paul, as is of Gary Johnson, the real problem are the people supporting him. Absolute narcissist. There's no point in pointing to him. In fact, I made a post last week. I'm pretty active on Facebook, and I write this column, The Daily Matt. It's every day.
I tweet it out every now and then.
Oh, I appreciate it.
I'm able to catch it.
Now, my point is that these people are narcissists. It's just like Narcissus. He fell in love with his own reflection in the stream and starved to death. These people, in the same way, they fall in love with this ideology, their own ideology, perfect ideology being repeated back to them. And the thing is, they ignore the good in the world around them. And the good in the world around them will actually nourish you. There's food there. But they're completely in love with this reflection of themselves, and it provides no nourishment. And that's the problem. It's not so much that they're in love with what they really believe. I love what I really believe. But I also recognize that the world isn't all that way, and if I want nourishment, I have to operate out there in the world. And it's funny, I made this argument, and one of the supporters of what's his name, Gary Johnson, one of the Gary Johnson supporters came to me, and he said, "Man, I could never vote for Mitt Romney and ever look at myself in the mirror again." He actually said that. That is exactly my point. The world is a dirty place. You have to. All gains are incremental, as Morton Blackwell said. You've got to get your hands dirty. And I don't know. The thing is, I'm raising my voice and trying to make a cogent argument.
Morton Blackwell? Too.
He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
I'm on the faculty of
LA. I've been there several times. Has he lost any weight by any chance?
No, I think he's on the Chris Christie plan.
Oh, God. Okay.
And he's getting up there in age. We need him to stick around because he's a hell of a fundraiser. He does a good job for the party, and He invites me to his 4th of July boat party. Do you guys invite? No, you probably don't.
I don't have any friends.
I know. And don't think because I'm doing this that I'm one either.
But I'm going to be pushed off the 10th floor in a minute.
Yeah, we're getting there. We still got like 15 minutes left, so say your prayers. There's no point in arguing with them. They're mental, and they may dig themselves out of it someday. Maybe there's a special. The thing is, you can't be a Gary Johnson supporter without having other serious mental issues too. So maybe on the basis of that, you can be institutionalized and fixed. And
so you're one of these. You. There is such a thing as a waste deserve.
There's no. Well, yeah. I mean, look. It doesn't. I'm not sure what these people do if they get. You assume they come from our people, or they'd be Romney voters otherwise. But think they're gettable, there's a serious problem with the way they think.
It started under Bush 1. I mean, it started under the first, you know, big time, like you could point right to him and be like, now there is a moderate Republican, Bush 1, you know. A diehard libertarian could say even there were some things about Reagan, you know, how he, the mental hospital couldn't hold a lot of them were state funded and could hold a lot more people, and Reagan let the crazies out. You could point to that.
I heard I heard it was the ACLU that forced it, said you couldn't keep those people. I don't know the story. That was before, thankfully,
not that he went about it gleefully. You know, well, I'm going to let these crazy sons of bitches out on the street. No way.
You are just all good with the impressions. You can do it. You throw Reagan and Obama. I'm going to have to have you do my voicemail message. Like, especially if he loses, and you can make, you know, Obama can come on and say, you know, this is
Matt. Well, okay, I'll do whatever impression you want, but I'm not going to make fun of the people who lean, perhaps not as extremely, but the way that I lean, which is, you know, conservative, libertarian, get out of my wallet, get out of my bedroom, you know, leave me alone. But when I get cancer from mouth cancer from my cigar, let's all chip in and pick up the bill together. How about that?
Look, I probably agree with Ron Paul on 80 or 90% of his stuff. The thing is, he was in Congress since Ford was president. He achieved nothing. He may as well have been a Democrat voting with the Democrat Party every single time, because the thing is, he never built a coalition. He never moved a bill like a little bit. You had Republicans sacrificing in their seats because they're going to get primary challenge to get a slightly better deal on the debt ceiling or on stimulus, or not stimulus, but on the bailout or TARP or anything like that. They were saying, look, if I vote for this bill, it'll be a little bit better, because if I as a Republican don't vote for it, you're going to have to get one more Democrat to vote for it, to pass it, and that means the bill is going to have to become just slightly worse to get that one extra Democrat. He was such a purist and refused to do anything. He was the king of the narcissist. He achieved nothing. And he has a counterpart on the other side, Dennis Kucinich, another guy who, for their side, made a lot of noise but maintained his purity and accomplished nothing. These guys, they may as well have been voting straight to – Paul may have been voting a straight ticket Democrat for all the good he did to the Republican Party, for all he did conservatism or libertarian. You look at a guy like Bob Barr or some of these other guys who went into Congress, they built a coalition of libertarian candidates, and they worked together, and you know, they maybe voted for less perfect bills than they wanted, but they prevented really turkeys from getting through. And that's what it takes, because, frankly, on, you know, we're neck and neck, we may win this election. Ron Paul, if it was truly Ron Paul had our nomination, good Lord, it would be over. It would be over.
Well, incrementally, we can get the you know, the nation. We're no longer living in a nation of people who wants to hear, vote for me, and you get to take care of yourself.
I would vote for that. I mean, the country. I understand that my point of view is not the same as the 51% we need.
That's neither here nor there. I'm actually talking about the rest of the country, and that's a scary thought to them. By the way, it's Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody! I almost forgot to mention, it's my favorite holiday. It's non-existent this year because I'm covering the election. And by the way, this month on duhprogressive.com has been our busiest month. I'm trying to do a countdown of all the articles I've had up this month. There's new stuff under news, under commentary, true op-ed.
you know, and you can check in. I actually get a lot of my news from my news from my own site too, because on the left side there's a True News section that refreshes every time you refresh or click on a new link. So yeah, Halloween my favorite month, and that idea is scary as hell to people that they have to take care of themselves. That means they can buy the 72-inch screen TV that they want, that their neighbor has. That means that they can't buy the, you know, I can't buy my fat tires. I got to stick with Miller Lite, or else just, you know what, maybe just have some water. You know, that's that means cutbacks. We are slowly, that mentality, that Ron Paul, Gary Johnson, libertarian-type mentality, albeit I think, unlike you, think it's noble. And
I think good. I think it's noble, but there's it's just the way they do it. Go ahead.
Well, it just can't be implemented overnight like that. I mean, can you imagine people, like, for example, the drug thing? Can you imagine, like, a former drug dealer? Now he's not, you know, drugs are illegal. He's out of business. What's he going to do, rush to Walmart, fill out an application, be a greeter? Imagine a drug dealer being a Walmart greeter. But you better have a nice day, mother. You know, you can finish the rest. I don't know. Drug dealers,
I thought,
were
much more.
You better have a nice day. Pop cap in your ass. I mean, come on. Think about that. I don't. You know, where are all these people who make their living off of the drug industry? What are they going to do overnight? Go be choir boys? Fine. They're going to turn. They're going to turn to crime. They're going to turn to another type of crime. You know, they'll mug you as you're trying to get into your car. They'll bust into your place.
That's got
to
be the
strangest
argument against drug legalization.
No, I'm serious. I know. It seems counterintuitive, but think about it. Give these criminals.
Can they play midnight basketball? Is that program still going on?
Well, yeah, but then you have to legalize gambling, though, around it. So, which is what they're going to be doing in Maryland anyway. And by the way, if you think Barack Obama is scary, you better wait till Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley gets it, you know, because the party's already grooming him to be the nominee in 2016. You think Obama's scary? I tell you what, Mr. Martin O'Malley, or what I call Martin O'Malley, he's going to be just as bad. But he'll have to continue the struggle. He'll have to continue the fight, like they all say. So he'll be even worse. He'll take it even more into a leftist direction. It's not because Obama hasn't tried either. But anyway, this is the last last word. Got 7 minutes.
So I have 7 minutes.
No, you don't have 7 minutes. You have the last word.
But
I didn't
you said
say
I had 7 minutes.
No. I said we have 7 minutes. You have the last word for Matt Brainerd.
All right. I actually don't have anything to say. I just wanted to know how much time I was going to get because I thought.
Okay, you're last.
You can friend me if anybody listens to this. You can just friend me on Facebook and read my genius. And if any of you have felt the need to nominate me for the Nobel Prize, I would readily accept for my writings in the Daily Mat and the peace that they have brought to the world. But it's Matt Brainerd, M-A-T-T, D as in Bravo, R-A-Y, N as in November, A-R, D as in Delta. Or I'm sure the show or somebody tweeting will link it or whatever. But find me, and yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah.
That's my plug.
Okay. Well, like I said, don't take his comments about the car and the balcony to heart. There's a lot of Tea Party folks out there who identify themselves as libertarian, natural law constitutionalists. You know what? You came up with what a lot of people would call a moderate, you know. So a lot of libertarians would say there's no difference. Well, I think there's a difference. And please get out there and vote this coming Tuesday. It's 6 days away. It's just 6 days away. So put out the yard signs. Go down to your. You can look it up all online. Look it up by your state, by your county. Go volunteer. Make the phone calls. Knock on the doors. Put on the little door hangers and go try to. You know, I have a friend. My girlfriend's sister. She votes Democrat every year. She never knows why. She was raised Democrat. Do you ever know the issues? No, not really. Why do you vote? Well, it's my civic duty. No! I mean, yes, but no. You don't have to. If you don't know anything about the issues, if you're not able to hear the different sides and make up an opinion about, you know, how each side presents each side of the issue, Don't vote. Stay home. Am I wrong to tell people to stay? I mean, if you don't know crap about, you know, stay the hell home. Go watch your honey puke puke. You know, we don't, you know, the rest of us will be going on deciding the fate of the country. So anyway, get out there. Try to convince those people to go vote, though, and try to convince them to go vote. You know, pull the lever for the goofy Mormon man, because I tell you, we got to get this guy out of there. We got to change the course that this country's headed on. So, anyway, you have one more insult to our viewers, Matt.
Hey, are you there? Just, of course, I'm boring the people.
No.
They'll be here soon. A variety of toppings, even some of the vegetarians among you, cheese pizza, Papa John's. Oh, actually, a local one. Papa John's not paying money, so we can't.
Yeah.
Not Papa John's until they start paying up for sponsorship of the program or paying me under the table. I will gladly drop your name.
Okay.
We didn't even get to talk about comedy.
Well, if Tom ever allows you back on the show again, we can. We can discuss, you know, because we're two pretty conservative guys in a district that's outstanding, you know, what, 90-some-odd% Democrat for Washington, D.C. I mean, it's pathetic, you know. I have to walk down to the school on Tuesday to vote. I don't. You know, that'll be the most meaningless walk of my life in terms of, you know, swaying this this district.
Well, you know, it still matters. I mean, the popular vote matters. So even if you're in a state that's decided, your vote's still important.
No,
it counts for something.
Yeah, it looks good on a board.
Oh, well, it sucks to win the electoral vote, but not to win the popular vote.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Now, that would never happen, right?
Yeah. Anyway, I'm Nick Caxia, DoubleGressiveDUHProgressive.com. I got an article on there right now about Debbie Washington Schultz, about what she would just love to say about election tampering and voter fraud. And Matt Brainerd, he's a devout Romney supporter, GOP activist, consultant, pollster, and Taekwondo, or whatever that is you study. So anyway, we got a split, and it's been great. Chatting with you all, and so that's basically it. I will see you sometime after this great storm that's coming next Tuesday. Okay, good night, sir.